How's it going, everybody? Sincerest apologies for the late upload this week. If you don't follow the Twitter or any of the Facebook pages, what happened is I was on my way home. I forgot to turn my phone on airplane mode. It's not something I normally do, but it's probably something I need to start doing. I ended up getting a phone call on the way home that I was not expecting because most people know my recording schedule, and it threw me off my time and threw me off my train of thought. So I just, I could not finish the episode last night. So with that out of the way, this is an episode of the Homeward Path podcast. My name is Adam. This is a show by MTG dads for MTG parents and anybody else who wants to listen. And we are right on the eve of a brand new standard format. We have 2 weeks to wait. 2 weeks. It's so close, I can feel it. I'm excited. The level of excitement I have for this standard format is through the roof compared to, like, Ixalan standard. You know, this time last year, I was not nearly as excited. So, rather than spend a week talking about modern results that don't really change the landscape of the format very much, I'm going to devote this entire episode to talking about week one standard. We're going to talk about the decks that I think are going to be good from day one and where the format can evolve from there. But first, I've got to thank the people who make this show possible. First and foremost, it's the network at constructedcriticism.com. If you have not checked out the content on that website, I don't know what you folks are doing. It's all fantastic. Every bit of it. I still listen religiously. So if you want good constructed tournament insight from the mouths of the professionals themselves, listen to Constructed Criticism. If you want good high-level pauper insight from the mouths of the high-level grinders themselves, listen to Common Knowledge. It's simple, it's straightforward, and it's fantastic. Speaking of simple, straightforward, and fantastic, you can check out our sponsor over at inkgaming.com and use our promo code CCMTG10 at checkout to get 10% off your order. And that is a simple, straightforward, and fantastic process to get you everything you need to how to play in or on with your cards. You can use pre-existing templates. You can use a custom design. They can do all the things. So just do it. Check it out. It's well worth your time. And if you would like to support the show directly, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. Again, we do not have any new patron shout outs to give this week. Kevin, we still love you, buddy. I'm still thankful. Just so you're aware. But again, contributions from both Patreon and the Inked Gaming sponsorship are what allow this show to improve over time. It will allow me to upgrade the equipment, potentially get a camera mount for the car so that we can start recording this as a video instead of recording it as just audio. And you can see the lovely Tennessee countryside behind me on the way home from work. And you can see all of my gesturing as I'm driving down the road, highly unsafe manner. But without all that out of the way, let's move on. Let's talk. Let's get going on standard because I'm excited. I am super excited for the standard format. I think I'm as excited about what's leaving as I am for the things that we're getting. So the big pillars of the format for the last year have been control decks, Hazoret decks, and the Scarab God decks, and two-thirds of that are leaving. Now, we've had some stuff in between, like the red-black mid-range deck was not really a Hazoret deck, but it wasn't really a Scarab God deck either. We had, you know, the various flavors of decks like Merfolk or Tribal decks or, you know, God Pharaoh's Gift, which was essentially like a super turbocharged version of a Scarab God deck. It was the least fair version of a Scarab God deck, where you were just all in on loading your graveyard and you were going to use your graveyard to bludgeon your opponent in the head. But on the whole, that's really what we could boil down most of the format to, and those decks are just not in existence anymore. Definitely not in their current form, but obviously not in any kind of carryover from what we've got. We don't have Hazoret anymore. We won't have the Scarab God anymore. We won't have Torrential Gearhulk, Hieroglyphic Illumination, or Glimmer of Genius anymore. All of these are cards that came to define the standard format. We won't have Disallow anymore. which sounds probably worse than it actually is, thanks to the Surveil counterspell coming in Guilds of Ravnica. So the first place to start on the other side of a format rotation, especially one this big that's taking this many cards with it, the first place to start is the decks that are sticking around that have been competitive that aren't losing too much. And the first one I'd like to talk about, while it does lose a ton, variations of it are still viable and are still going to be major players on the other side of this rotation, and that's the red deck. Now, I cannot guarantee what form this red deck will take. It could be Boros, it could be Izzet, it could be mono red wizards like the Flame of Keld deck if we get another one drop wizard, or if we get another good two drop wizard. As long as the mana curve looks reasonable, there's enough wizards to support Wizard's Lightning in the deck, and you can play 12 burn spells and the Flame of Keld, this deck is still going to be good. I mean, even if that's the default mode, if it's just mono red Flame of Keld with enough wizards to turn on Wizard's Lightning, like, that deck is still good. It's still good enough. But even going further away from that, going into kind of maybe unexplored territory, something like the Pirate Red deck, where you're playing Pirates and you're playing, you know, Daring Buccaneer is a heck of a one drop. Just a one mana 2/2. All you got to do is play some Pirates, and some of them you're in for anyway. A card like Fanatical Firebrand fleshes out your one drop curve really well. You know, there's a ton of cards you can play. There's tribal synergies you can play on. In blue-red, you can do wizards. You can do kind of a wizard prowess deck with Adelise the Cinderwind and Wee Dragonauts and Goblin Electromancer at 2 mana to make your lightning strikes into lightning bolts and give your charter courses some teeth. You know, that's a deck you can play. And that's a deck I'd be comfortable sleeving up because it's a deck I play a little bit in Modern. As long as we get another one-drop wizard, that's really what we're talking about here. That's really what we're missing. Goblin Chain Whirler is still in the format and a huge draw to the color red. I mean, Rekindling Phoenix is still a powerful creature, especially in a format that may come to eventually be defined by Assassin's Trophy. Having a creature that can come back from the graveyard to kind of distill a lot of the value that they get out of their Assassin's Trophy, that's a big deal. So the red deck is still going to have some teeth. We still have the most important part of it, which is there are going to be some red creatures that fill out a mana curve, or barring that, you can do kind of a white weenie deck and splash the red, because you'll still have 8 burn spells and you'll still have, you know, if you're playing the white deck that splashes red, you can have 8 burn spells and you can have a card like Pride of Conquerors that acts like a super burn spell and just be this really wide, aggressive white deck that just has the ability to brain you for 5 to close the game out. That's a deck you can build. You know, so all of that kind of falls under the umbrella of the red deck. You can have a lot of different strategies, but at their heart, they can still all be red decks. The next strategy that I feel like is going to be really viable on the other side of this rotation is going to be the green mid-range creature deck. And when I say green mid-range creature deck, I'm referring almost exclusively to decks that want to curve Llanowar Elves into Steelleaf Champion. And I think, for me, this is my pick for the best deck week one. For a few reasons. One, they have interaction for Teferi in Assassin's Trophy. That's the one thing they were really missing, like the green deck that was splashing black for Duress out of the board and maybe splashing for Scrap Heap Scrounger. Well, it loses Scrap Heap Scrounger, but your main deck can support cards like Assassin's Trophy, can support cards like Cast Down as an interactive spell. If you're worried too much about falling behind to red decks, you can play a card like Moment of Craving. You know, there's a lot to work with there. But by and large, you're just this green deck that's full of big, stupid creatures. Steel Leaf champion, Lenoir, you know, Lenoir Elf Steel Leaf champion. Pelt Collector is my pick for a really, really powerful sleeper out of Guilds of Ravnica. Being functionally an experiment one, but you can play it in this Stompy deck and it can get really big. A card like Untamed Kavu to me, it's a draft filler from Dominaria. Big surprise there. I like bad cards and I cannot lie. But a card like Untamed Kavu has a little bit of sleeper value in conjunction with a card like Pelt Collector, because it can grow your Pelt Collector to a 2/2 if you end up having to curve 1 drop, 2 drop, 3 drop, 4 drop. But it can also just give you something to do with 5 mana. Make you a 5/5 with Vigilance and Trample. That's perfectly reasonable at 5 mana. I get that we've had some absolute bombs at 5 mana the last couple of years. Cards like Glorybringer, cards like the Scarab God. So a card that's just a singularly powerful creature at 5 mana doesn't seem... Or that a card that's a really efficient rate creature at 5 mana doesn't seem super exciting. But the fact that it's also a reasonable rate creature at 2 mana is what keeps me interested. I've been interested in that card since it came out. So getting another excuse to try it out and see if I can make it, you know, an integral part of a shell that I'm wanting to play, that I'm in. I really like this green deck. And then from there, you know, Pelt Collector picks up bonuses from Untamed Kavu. It can pick up bonuses from Thrashing Brontodon. It can obviously pick up bonuses from Steelleaf Champion, from Vinemare, from a card like Goreclaw, if that's something you're into. You know, it's really easy to give your Pelt Collector Trample and scare the pants off your opponent. You know, when your one drop can grow and you can also keep putting additional threats on the board to force your opponent to wipe the board, that's a big deal. And I am really good. I am really in for a creature that can do something like that. And then at 3 mana, you have Steelleaf Champion, which is just really the most efficient rate creature. Being a 5/4 that your opponent just can't comfortably block the way a lot of red decks want to, you end up having to trade multiple cards into it, you know, cast a burn spell to pump your Adelies so that it's allowed to block and then block and trade. That seems bad. That seems really awkward. You know, but those are the kinds of plays you have to make in order to be able to interact with a Steelleaf Champion, or you have to try to race it. And if you can either gain some life or add some additional power to the board, that becomes a losing proposition. So all the way around, Steelleaf Champion just feels like a card that's in a really good place. And I know there's going to be some people trying to start up the flames because of Settle the Wreckage being in the format. We'll get to that in a minute. But from the Stompy perspective, Settle the Wreckage is a backbreaking card if you play into it. If you get too wrapped up in trying to add a bunch of pressure to the board and you get too worried about trying to just absolutely murder your opponent as fast as you possibly can, you absolutely will get bent over by a Settle the Wreckage. It's a thing that's going to happen. But so many of your creatures win the game on their own, you don't have to worry about trying to press your opponent to death right now. You want them dead sooner rather than later, yes, but you are a deck chock full of threats that kill your opponent. You know, a card like Untamed Kavu seems unassuming, but 2 damage a turn adds up, and once you get to 5 mana, that's a 5/5 that kills your opponent in 4 swings. And it doesn't tap, so your opponent can't seal it away. That's relevant. That kills your opponent. Vinemare kills your opponent. They can't, Ixalan's binding it. They can't seal it away. They have to find a way to block it. They have to Settle the Wreckage, the Vinemare. Galta kills your opponent. They have to trophy it. They have to seal away it. They have to binding it. They have to Settle the Wreckage. It kills your opponent. Steelleaf Champion kills your opponent. Chump blocking's not really an option. So having this deck full of threats that your opponent has to answer puts your opponent in a situation where if they stumble, they die. And that's really a position I really like being in week one in a standard format. And it has some teeth going forward too. Get it? Teeth, big green monsters and teeth. Anyway. From there, we go into the other Level Zero deck, and it's one that a lot in the Constructed Criticism family are really interested in, and that is Teferi control decks. Because Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, is arguably the best card left in the standard format after the rotation of Hazoret, Scarab God, and Glorybringer. And it's hard to dispute that Teferi is the best card. It really is. I mean, if you resolve Teferi to a board where you are a touch behind, a touch ahead, or even, you probably win that game if the Teferi, if you get to untap with it. That's how powerful the card is. And it's really hard not to get interested in that kind of power level as a control deck. Now, because I feel like Stompy is as good as it is in week one, because it can line up so well against the red deck, because it can be effective against the control deck, and because it, like the red deck, can punish a lot of the unrefined deck lists you will see in week one, I think the straight blue-white lists, the list that can play Settle the Wreckage, is still better than the list that can't in week one. Because having access to the Boros 3 damage to everything burn spell is less relevant when your opponent's casting 5/4s and 6/6s and, you know, big stupid animals. You know, 3/4s just kind of laugh at that card. So being able to cast Exile your board and, you know, between Settle the Wreckage and Cleansing Nova, being able to catch all the way up against a Stompy opponent that gets too aggressive after the board. If your opponent plays around Settle the Wreckage and commits another threat to the board, then attacks with their first one. You know, attacks with their first threat, gets the Settle the Wreckage, and then commits their second threat to the board. Like, you can really bust somebody up with a Cleansing Nova and then untap into a Teferi. Like, that's a real good place to be. So, I mean, Teferi control decks are really straightforward, but getting the 100% correct list in week one is almost impossible. That's why I would lean toward blue-white. You have more generic answers, if a little slower, if a little bit more tap-out oriented, if a little bit more on the spectrum of trying to just answer what your opponent's doing instead of trying to predict what your opponent's doing and cut them off. You know, a card like Ixalan's Binding is not a sexy pick right now, but it's a card that does a lot of work. It's going to get in there and do what you need it to do. So being able to leverage card draw, counter spells, removal, and Teferi together is, while not a particularly exciting proposition for week one standard, it's a proven formula, and we got just enough from Guilds of Ravnica to keep it relevant. So that would be my pick for another good starting point for week one that could potentially get very good as the format starts to go through its normal cyclical evolution of aggro decks are good, then mid-range decks are good, and then finally we have control decks. From there, I mean, that's where level zero is to me. From there, level one, or, you know, from level zero, week one standard, that's where I like. That's what I think is going to be potent. That's what's going to be powerful. So from there, you can really start to innovate going forward. Once we see what these lists actually look like, once we know what kinds of cards people are playing, a black-based mid-range deck could be very good once we know what we're up against. Assassin's Trophy is a heck of a magic card. It's the best removal spell I have seen in a very long time, being able to answer literally anything for 2 mana. And while you can get caught with your pants down against specifically fast, aggressive decks that are going to overload you on 1 and 2 drops so that you are not gaining mana advantages from trading your Assassin's Trophy for their card, the number of times you can trade an Assassin's Trophy for a Steelleaf Champion feels really strong. The number of times you can trade an Assassin's Trophy for a Teferi feels really strong. You know, trade your Assassin's Trophy for their Lyra Dawnbringer. You don't care that it's legendary. You don't care that it's a 5/5. It's just dead. So I could see a Jund-style black-based mid-range deck coming out of this, being kind of this I don't know, you can be aggressively or reactively slanted. A card like Vraska Relic Seeker is really good in context of a format where Steel Leaf Stompy is really good. Vraska being able to piggyback off your Assassin's Trophies and help pull a little bit of the pressure off of them, just keep the removal going and then leave a Planeswalker behind. A card like Vivian Reed is really good in this scenario. There's plenty of value-oriented haymakers at the top of your mana curve, so as long as you can figure out what you want to do in your early turns, whether you want to be interacting with your opponent and then trying to leverage your card advantage later, or if you want to just keep trying to slam down some threats early in the game and then leverage your card advantage once your opponent interacts. Whatever you're doing, I think a black-based mid-range deck could be very good. The other deck that I'm really high on is a blue-black tempo shell. And the reason why is the card advantage generated, or the virtual card advantage generated by Surveil. That being that you can go through your deck and find specific cards you need very quickly. Between cards like Anticipate, Chart a Course, Opt, that we already have, and all of the Surveil cards that we are gaining access to, none of them seem particularly pushed, admittedly. You know, Surveil to draw a card could have been one mana, but they decided to err on it being two for the sake of keeping it from dominating the format and being this ubiquitous card that Preordain and Ponder were. It could have been broken, but they decided to scale it back and keep it just good. But the other advantage to blue-black as a tempo shell is we got a lot of flash creatures in Standard, especially after Guilds. We already have Merfolk Trickster, Direfleet Poisoner, Dreamcaller Siren. If you go far enough in on Pirates, you can get a little bit of value, a little bit of extra value out of that. Being able to tap down some creatures to negate a combat phase and then untap and start pressuring your opponent's life total really fast. But more than that, we're picking up Whisper Agent in Guilds of Ravnica. We're picking up a 3-mana 3-2 with Flash that also offers a little bit of card selection. Stop me if you've heard of that. A 3-mana 3-2 creature that offers a little bit of card selection and has some other kind of irrelevant mechanical tie-in. Oh, wait. We just banned one of those. This is not Rogue Refiner. Do not mince my words. This is not Rogue Refiner. It's not nearly as powerful. But Surveil 1 is not nothing, Flash is not nothing, and it's still a reasonable rate creature. And then you have, you know, a smattering of disruptive or aggressive black and blue creatures early in the game. If you want to go in on a card like Favorable Winds, you can play cards like Siren Storm Tamer and Kitesail Freebooter to turn on your Dreamcaller Siren later in the game and make, you know, you're playing enough flying creatures that Favorable Winds becomes appealing. You can go in on Merfolk Trickster. You can go in on Siren Storm Tamer. And then go in on some Wizards. And then a card like Wizard's Retort potentially becomes appealing. There's a lot of different directions you can go to leverage this concept of being a mana-efficient blue-black deck that can still interact and still see a lot of cards without having to actually draw them. And then, of course, there's going to be some kind of weird out-of-left-field combo deck, a la the Blue-Red God Pharaoh's Gift deck. When we get too inbred on fighting over creatures and fighting over board states, a deck like that is going to come along that doesn't care what you're doing and is just going to kill you. So, I mean, keep an eye out for that. It may be a deck that gets something in the next set. But it's something that can happen, and it's something we really need to keep our eyes peeled for. So to kind of wrap it up, the TLDL, if you didn't want to listen to the whole thing, the best place to start in week one is to be proactive, and that's why I really like a red deck, or I really like the Stompy deck. And if you don't want to be proactive, or if you are just more comfortable being a reactive player, or if you know specifically kind of what proactive decks opponents are going to be playing based on talking to other people, Teferi's not an awful place to be. And then from there, you can start to kind of play around with some of the new cards, some of the new mechanics. You can start to leverage some concepts. Like Undergrowth, I think, is an undervalued mechanic. there's a lot of advantage to be had for a card like Golgari Raiders or a card like Necrotic Wound, or, you know, there's none, again, none of the mechanical cards are particularly pushed, but a lot of them are reasonable. And you get enough reasonable cards together and you have a pretty reasonable deck. So, but again, for week one, you want to stick to tried and true, and then you can start to kind of branch out once you have an idea of what the format's about. So with all that out of the way, if you want to take to Twitter and tell me I am the wrongest person that has ever existed in the history of the internet, first of all, that you're not the first person to tell me that. Second of all, you can do so on Twitter at HomewardPathMTG. You can do so on Facebook. My name is Adam Spain. Or you can join either one of the Facebook groups, the Constructive Criticism family, or the Homeward Pathfinders. Either one of them, I am fairly active in both. If you would like to make comments about the show, you can do so. I mean, I'm fairly open to feedback. If you have ideas for future shows, if you have anything you'd like me to cover, I mean, just let me know. I'm pretty easy to work with. And then all of that brings us around to my favorite segment of the show every single week. It is one of the things that I enjoy more than any other, because as an MTG dad, as somebody who is constantly looking for ways to stay excited about things, I love me some humor, and I love me some bad humor, and I love me some dad humor. So I thought it would be great to make my Twitter outreach program hashtag MTG dad jokes. And I could not have been more excited about it. We had two contributions from Twitter this week. One was from Steam Elephant tagging me on someone at Ristic Study. It says, boarding a skipper plane from Seattle to Victoria, but I could have taken Teferi. Teferi. Anyway, I thank you for that submission. I enjoyed it every time I've read it. And then Mason Clark, in response to MTG Grindcast saying the Living End deck guide is currently at 2,500 words and maybe halfway done, I hope somebody actually wants this thing. Mason Clark says, yeah, but how much of that is recycled material? Recycled. Okay. And then we had another one from LGS hero Zach Morgan, who said he really wants to build some kind of like a Kiln Fiend, like an Is It Blitz deck in Modern, because our Pauper tournaments aren't firing particularly well right now, and he just wants an excuse to be able to come swinging in with a Kiln Fiend, look his opponent dead in the face, and say, man, this guy's killing you. So, Zach and I are going to have to get together and make this happen so that we can have an MTG dad joke in real life. That list will be going up once I have it together, for those of you who are interested in such a thing. So with all that out of the way, thanks again for listening, guys. I'm going to catch you next week. I hope I have, you know, more specialized deck concepts to talk about. Maybe I'll have a list. I don't know. We're going to have fun with it. I look forward to brewing new standard. I know most of you do too. So keep at it. Enjoy yourselves, and I will catch you next week.